Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, it would do a lot for you because they're looking strong. They're
don't do that strong to me. Don't come back on here they look disrespecting good my team again. I feel like every week there's some kind of caveat to why can't we just be great.
No, there's no caveat, but they just look fucking, they look strong. But you guys look strong too, you know? It'll be a hell of a series.
I don't believe it. You're not seeing it with your eyes.
Lakers got a nigga named Lonnie. I think it's over for the Nuggets, bro. I don't know, bro. Lonnie? Coming off the bench? You know that nigga mad.
Y'all done fucked up. You done let Lonnie out the cage.
Lonnie got activated.
Nigga come off the bench like, take a black and mild from behind my ear like, yo, hold this.
They pulled out a Lonnie Yu-Gi-Oh card and just slammed that shit.
The government growing babies, microchips in your anus. All koala bears are racist. The ozone layer owes me money. Martians invented turkey stuffing. Y'all can't tell me nothing.
Hey, I'm
back.
No, come back with it. I'm not doing that. I'm not setting that precedent. I don't like it at all.
Look, we are documentarians, my friend. It's not our responsibility to choose right and wrong.
Oh,
we simply are witnesses to what's happening out in this world. And you have no right, sir. You have no right given some of the monsters you've referenced
what?
As we've intro'd.
Fight clean. You came through with the platinum there's FUBU. I don't like it. No, I'm sorry. Continue. That was a
tough one. Welcome to a phenomenal episode of My Mama Told Me,
the podcast where we dive deep into the pockets of black conspiracies.
And we finally work to prove that if the writers are in fact going to get justice in this strike, they are going to need to employ the black Israelites. They're going to have to get them same people who stood out for Kyrie and fixed his job somehow in line with this. They're going to need those bigots by their side if they're ever going to get justice. I'm Langston Kerman.
And I'm your man from the Congo, as referenced by those goddamn Hebrew Israelites. They refuse to acknowledge my racial makeup, and I don't love it.
But they are going to get you those writing jobs back, so hey, you got to make peace.
Right, watch out.
Wait,
for
what's the logic behind this?
Two.
What's the logic behind the black Israelites?
Listen, brother.
No, it makes perfect sense to me. I just want to make sure our logic matches up because as far as I'm concerned, every black Israelite is a member of Job Corps and cannot read. So writing is the perfect job for them.
Yo, shout out to Job Corps employing every dude who was kind of good at basketball at your high school. He needed somewhere to go when the Ball State scholarship went through. Yeah, Job Corps was there for him.
When that D3 walk-on experience didn't turn into something, when you got to go with Job Corps.
When the community college gym workouts didn't work out too well. Yeah.
Turns out the coach didn't want me that bad. That's what he said. Yeah, I believe that what's missing in the strike, and I've been out there a few times marching and whatnot, but I believe that what's failing is a sick passion that can only be found by the Hebrew Israelites. They're the type of people that will knock a nigga out for disagreeing with them on basic things. And I think that's the kind of bite we need in this fight.
I get that. To go against the streamers, I think definitely you need a hitter. I agree with that. I think that's good.
They'll punch a car window and then it's like, all right, now we got to negotiate.
Yeah.
Now we got to take this to the table.
They punch and they're good at story structure. That's what you need. See, enough writers, they're only good at one thing. They're not good at both.
I love that you're trying to get them in the room. I just thought we were employing them as like a mob, but you're like, nah, if they're going to march, then they got to write on the next big program.
That's, yeah. They have to be eligible for streaming too. Black Israelites need streaming residuals too. You know what I mean?
That's fair. We are almost 5 minutes into the podcast and we haven't introduced our guest despite this turning into something far, far more silly than I think we've ever taken it. So good for us, fellas. He's phenomenal. You've already heard his voice. You've already heard his opinions on the writers and the Black Israelites. He's a hilarious comedian. He's been a writer for Atlanta. He's been a writer for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. He is currently a writer for Abbott Elementary. He's a dear friend. Give it up for Jordan Temple.
Yeah, boy.
Fuck yeah.
What was that?
It's just a little bit of me being me.
Yeah, my man press buttons. He don't have to explain himself afterwards.
I think it's from some kind of a Nollywood movie.
No, remember it's that YouTube where that man is like making meats.
Oh, he's like, these are
good meats. Yeah. I don't know what his purpose in life is, but I know he's an aficionado of his own meats.
Love it. Love it. Love it.
Oh. Jordan, you came to us with a conspiracy that I will say it's a heavy one. We're getting into some heavy shit, I think, with this one, but I'm excited to go there with you. You said, my mama told me.
Black people don't get depressed.
Talk about it. Speak on it.
Tell us more.
Yeah, you guys.
Heavy like that man's.
Yeah, you introduced it.
Oh, did I? Yeah, you know, we be jolly. We be happy, I guess, or we be grumpy, but we don't be depressed. So, you know, I feel like, you know, that's definitely like the church. That's definitely rap. Even though niggas will sound depressed, they deny it. Or there's like, I'm emo, or I'm angry, but I'm not sad. And people get confused to like even what depression is, because it's deeper than rap. It's deeper than sadness. Depression, by definition, is internalized anger, you know, that you basically don't feel like you can express. It doesn't have an outlet. So then it kind of goes interior, you know what I mean? And it's chronic. It's a disease. You know, it's all that. You feel me?
Yeah. And so to be clear, when you say Black people don't get depressed, this is something you believe, or this is something you are like, no, this is a conspiracy theory I hear and disagree with.
It's a conspiracy theory I hear. I think more Black people are believing in it less, but overall, is still one that is pretty prevalent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%. I'm always initially on the side of black exclusion from ailments, like in general. Like, there was like 3 weeks where I thought we weren't going to get COVID. Like, in the beginning, I was like, man, yeah. I ain't going to have it. And I do that with like,
It's a problem. When they were saying it, I thought that's silly. But then there was that period where, like, we for real weren't getting it, or at least statistically it wasn't showing up. And I believed in that in a way that I probably shouldn't have. I was like, well, maybe kind of. Maybe this is just white people, like, getting justice against them type shit.
You always hope that Mother Nature is going to strike back against white people, I think, is what you're saying.
Like, yeah, The Happening's a terrible film, but I kind of...
like, there's going to be some kind of flood that only affects them. On a moral level.
I mean, you hope that, but then there's also still plenty of black people that, like, black people also don't like. It's just like, okay, black people don't get COVID, the cool for us. But, like, even Jussie Smollett, like, even Don Lemon, like, I don't really like them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You ain't rooting for all black people to not get COVID.
I'm not saying those are particularly the ones. I'm just saying black people in general, the ones that people don't like as much. If they ask that, they probably make some exceptions. You know.
Damn.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
But yeah.
A room for everybody black. No, you're not.
80%. Yeah,
we be rooting for each other and then not rooting for each other. It's a complicated dance over here, but we doing it.
Rooting for everybody black not to get COVID.
I'll take that.
So with you acknowledging or feeling that this is certainly something that, like, you hear all the time, how do you feel like black people are meant to battle against this? How do we face off against this misconception that we don't get depression? Because it is very cool to say, nigga, I don't get depressed. I'm black. Like that. You know what I mean? That objectively is a cool lie. How do you get people to get to buy into their reality?
I think black people just transmute it in their deniability, you know, plausible deniability. The more I think, you know, you try to run from shit, it's like the Salon song. I try to smoke it away, sex it away. Yeah. I think black people just
read it away. Nah, brother, don't rush through this.
Yeah.
give us what you have.
Don't you cry, baby. I think we just transmute it into cooler shit. I think the more that shit was just
you know why you stopped where you stopped, because it was about to hit another high note that you couldn't handle, and I love that about you. Anyway, I understand.
But
transmutation,
know. Yeah. Or, yeah, it's just a lot of transmutation. I think black people, when they deny they're depressed or, you know, given to feeling sad, feeling sad, they just make cooler shit. We just, like, make better music. Oh. You know what I mean? We just, we transmute it. And I don't even think transmuting is, like, denial. But I do think when black people are working through depression, they transmute and make real cool shit. Like, you know.
Right.
I think it can be a highly productive. I know for me personally, once I learned about mental health in a real way and kind of started having the tools to assess how I'm feeling and stuff like that, that made everything harder. Like, it was cooler when I could just, like, nah, man, I'm just going to smoke some weed, watch this game, and I'll be all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then that to have to be like, damn, I'm, like, depressed, I got to figure this out. That's a much harder work to do.
Yeah, yeah. Frederick Douglass said the worst thing one of his slave masters ever did to him was teach him to read, because then he had the words to understand his, like, captivity. And it's like, yeah, it's that where it's like, fuck, now I know that these are symptoms of a bad thing and I need to figure out how to resolve them. Whereas before it's just like, it's a down day.
This nigga Frederick Douglass. This nigga Frederick Douglass is a tricky dick. This nigga's a tricky dick. Because then he learned how to read.
He also beat that nigga's ass, bro.
Yeah, but he also learned how to read then left his wife for a white woman. So this nigga's tricky, you know what I'm saying? I don't trust this nigga, you know what I'm saying?
He read about nicer white women, and he was like, I'm going to try that.
Oh, I don't like this take.
Yo, cancel Langston. How about that?
I just read Great Expectations. You know what these women are doing.
He's like, dog, they're giving out money. They're literally giving out money. This lady and I got to work hard forever.
Man, I'm a boycott.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm not defending Frederick Douglass in this situation, but I see where his logic went. You know what I mean?
I think that's the first step down a slippery slope, my man.
Boycott Langston's weekend at Dr. Grin's. But this nigga Frederick was off his rocker.
I love my white wife. Let me be clear. There was a period for maybe y'all remember this where there was a TikTok video circulating of all the men of Insecure and our supposed white wives that like somebody had assembled a bunch of pictures, and truly only one person in the lineup even had a white wife. The rest of them were all just like light skinned or Latinas or just, you know, a weird lighting in the room. No, truly, it was like some of them are like pretty like fair or darker skinned people. And they're like, yeah, that's a white lady. But point being, I love my white wife, you know, and I was in that video and they called my wife white. And it still bugs me a little bit.
I could tell.
That's so annoying. That's so annoying.
What was the music on behind the video?
Something mean.
Making my way downtown.
Yeah, it was something. It was something truly like gut wrenching and evil. Something that cuts me to my core, but I don't even remember the song. It just triggers me when I hear it. Yeah,
you don't have to say you remember it. I wouldn't either.
Look at this nigga. Look at this nigga hanging out with the manager.
Exactly.
Look at this thing calling the manager.
It's very interesting because I think a lot of it's familial in the sense that, like, I thought it was crazy because my mom's not, like, big on black people having mental issues, health issues. And my mother was a social worker for years. Like, we had the DSM in our house. And my mom's still not on some, like, go, I take an antidepressant. Like, I wonder what it is that builds up that resistance specifically to, like, these mental problems. Like, where does that come from? Like, were your families like that? Were both your families like that?
Yeah, I would say my mom certainly is not. I don't think she was like at all ignorant on the subject, but she wasn't promoting any like reflection beyond just like act different or look at the world differently. Like, I think my sisters, if we were being honest, probably were suffering through versions of like depression. And I don't think anybody was at all had the instinct to be like, we should go seek help inside of this.
Right.
Yeah.
How big is your family?
Mine is.
I can never tell.
I'm the oldest of five.
God damn.
Yeah. But my shit's real separated because both my parents have been married a fuck ton of times.
Okay.
So like none of us have had like a only two of my sisters have the same set of parents, and then the rest is like a mixing and matching situation.
All right.
Hell yeah.
I just wanted to check. Yeah. But, and is there, I just wanted to check. And at least in the black side of your family, is there any history of like mental health? Like, is anyone in therapy or anything like that?
No. My grandmother literally stabbed my grandfather.
Yeah.
In the back with a knife. And they just kept on, like, keeping on. You know what I mean? Like, she pretended to need a hug and then stabbed him in the back like an assassin.
Damn, like amazing. A hug assassin.
She hit him. Yeah. You know them hug assassins that be going around doing stuff.
Are you in therapy, Langston?
No, I've only gone to therapy once, as it was more a family therapy thing when I had to go as a kid, and I've never gone back as an adult.
Damn.
Or sought help in any form or way.
Because I'll be in there, man. It's not great, but I'm in there. I think I'm the first person in my family to regularly go to therapy easily.
Wow.
Easily.
Jordan, you go to therapy?
I actually got David into therapy.
Yeah, Jordan put me on.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And what a process it's been.
Ugh. I probably need it. Let me be clear. I'm not bragging.
Langston,
as much as I.
All right. You got a perfect family. You got a perfect wife. You got a nice white wife. Nice white wife. All right. All right.
Shout out Freddie Duggs.
Light skin, white wife, perfect family. We get it. All right. You're perfect. All right.
Shout out my man Dirty Money Freddy.
Wait, so this is interesting to me.
Who's this?
What would it take? Because like we're coming from this, what would it take to get you into therapy, Langston? Just out of curiosity.
I think that what would probably get me into therapy is needing it more in my marriage than needing it personally. I think that there is probably a level of immediate necessity that hasn't yet happened that would make me feel like, oh, this is something I got to resolve right now, or I'm going to make shit weird for me or others or whatever it is. And that's probably not the right approach for therapy, but that is the one that my brain sort of lives in. And if my marriage started to feel like, oh, shit, if we don't do something, this ain't going to work, then I'd probably take it to that route.
But you don't think personally, because let's crack it open. This is like a men's group anyways now. Do you feel like you never were led towards that point because of an aversion to therapy, primarily because of being Black? Like, do you feel like the reason you never ended up there, or you think you just got like saved by your white wife?
I think I've lived with the aversion. I don't know that it would be fair to point it only or exclusively on my Black family, right? Like, at its core, I have both a Black family that sort of is, you know, just traditionally Black in that sense. But then there's also like a repressed Jewish side of people that are avoiding sort of like that type of reflection or openness or whatever it is that also wasn't telling me like, hey, you should go to therapy. When we went, it was because things had become explosive enough in the house where it was like, okay, emergency, motherfucker, let's fix this.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm gonna wait till, you know, the fucking pipes are leaking through my walls. And
wait
then
till
I'll
see.
Be like,
wait till you, what did she stabs you in the back?
Let's jump
baby.
In, baby. I hear this stuff works.
I think the writer's strike is gonna go on long enough. We're gonna see people we never thought would start smoking crack start to smoke crack. So I think once Langston once Langston starts smoking crack, I think he'll be in therapy. And actually, I think this is perfect because I'm starting to sell crack. So, you see.
Well, first of all, if our peers start doing crack, that's going to give me and my wife so much more to talk about. And I don't know if that's going to slow me down much. But if you're right, if I do eventually start smoking crack, I promise you both that I will go to therapy.
Right.
I will do crack and therapy, hopefully not simultaneously, but more than likely they will be.
You can do crack therapy. Sometimes crack can be therapy. Do you know this?
Jordan, you got a great sales pitch.
Yeah. Yo, this is like a street level Pfizer exec right now. No, it's not
you fucking with
me.
That Moderna?
Yeah.
Come on, bro. Come on. You know what they do over there, right?
Come on, baby. You don't need those teeth.
Come on, man. Pfizer is a trusted brand. You gotta think. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Jordan Temple and more My Mama Told Me.
My name is Johnny B. Good. and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same exact set of 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including actress and star of the mega hit sitcom Friends, Courtney Cox.
You can't go around it, so you just go through it. This is a roadblock. It's going to catch you down the road. Go through it. Deal with it.
Comedian, writer, and star of the series Catastrophe, Rob Delaney.
I shouldn't feel guilty about my son's death. He died of a brain tumor. It's part of what happens when your kid dies. Intellectually, you'll understand that it's not your fault, but you'll still feel guilty.
Alt-rock icon, Liz Phair.
That personal disaster wrote Guyville. So everything comes out of a dead end.
And many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
Because I look good. You look good. I smell good. I feel good.
And you sing good.
And make love good.
Welcome. Oh. Welcome back to My Mama Told Me. We are discussing whether or not black people get, I think we've all decided black people get depression. I think we're discussing the stigmatism against it in the black community with Jordan Temple. Langston has deflected all attempts to get him into therapy and said that the only way it's happening is if he smokes some crack, which is a step. I think it's a step.
I think Jordan said that was the only way it's happening, and I didn't fight it. I think that's one of the ways that will get me into therapy is smoking crack.
All right, that's pretty decent.
Jordan, I did some research on your conspiracy theory that we would love to unpack with you. Obviously, if any of this feels false to you, you should say so, because I don't know much, but the National Study of American Life shows that while more white people are documented as having depression, 17.9% versus 10.4% in American black people, and then 12.9% in Caribbean black people. So Caribbean black people went in by almost 3% against black people in America for depression. They didn't mention Africans. Sorry about that, David.
You didn't have to bring that up.
Wait, so Caribbean black people, it says, are reported being more depressed?
More depressed.
That's so funny.
Shout out Haiti.
I mean, I'm not like culturally Haitian, like at all, but it's still, I guess, in my blood. Like my father was from Haiti, and you know, I grew up around I'd see my grandmother, my paternal grandmother. She didn't speak any English, so I was like, I guess that's pretty Haitian. I don't fucking know. Like, so I guess I'm a little bit, I don't know, a little depressed.
Yeah, no, I think the numbers didn't, it surprised me, but then it didn't surprise me, I think, with that weird difference between us. But it also says that while we have more of it, while white people, there are more of them that have it, our depression in Black people across the board is statistically longer in span. Do you know what I mean? So like, yeah, they get depressed, but their depression often is not persisting throughout their entire life. Yeah. Whereas for Black people, it often is, or at least for longer periods of our lives.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable. We die first. I get it.
Yeah. They said the persistence for white people is around 56.5%. And then, the persistence for Black people, rather, is 56.5%, whereas for white people, it's 38.6%.
Damn.
So we're way longer for persisting and throughout your whole life kind of thing.
That's one thing Black people are, persistent. So.
Give this man a beat. If ever there was a time to give the man a beat.
Nah, but... I mean,
let him freestyle for a second.
I said, yo, there's the thing, freestyle therapy, deep in the anals of quarantine. A nigga was waking up every morning and freestyle rapping for 15 minutes.
Damn.
Straight. Like, no breaks in there?
No breaks. No, I didn't drink water. No beats? I didn't even,
No beats?
Nah.
Like,
nah.
No beats, just like...
Fuck. No beats. Beats.
Okay.
To beats.
Wait, yeah. So do you feel like, all right, now that you've been a freestyle aficionado, let's say, because we don't know what kind of quality work you're putting out there, but right. 15 minutes straight, do you feel ready for, like, the Five Fingers of Death shit on Sway? Like, could you live by your freestyling, die by your freestyling, or is it nah?
You know what would make the five? It's easy for me to do the Five Fingers of Death. You know why? Because I got six fingers. Do you understand? When I freestyle,
no,
no,
no, I don't.
I don't get it at all.
It sounded y'all so ready. Good.
It scared me.
It was like some cool New York talk. I didn't get it.
I pictured it in my head, and I was like, I still don't know what that means. But yeah, go ahead.
I felt it when you said it.
Come on. Come on, baby. Come on. You in Jordy's world. It ain't got to make sense, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Wait. Okay.
Hold on. I think we got a beat for you.
Hell yeah.
Come on, bro. I need this.
Give my man his taste.
I need these freestyles like water, baby. Come on, baby.
There it is.
Ooh. Oh, shit. Uh-oh.
Yo, turn my headphones up. Yo. Off the top of the dome, we talk about depression and I'm home. Almost forgot about the freestyle today, but I didn't. I was laying down and napping. I was jerking off and I was rapping. I was jerking off and I said, what time is it? Almost time for my mama told me.
Oh, motherfucking bars, nigga. Fucking you know nothing about that.
Yep.
Nah, that be.
Yep.
I mean, I feel better.
Six fingers.
imagine 13 and a half more minutes of that.
We know you didn't get enough. My man could have kept fucking going.
He got
going.
To jerking off in the first 90 seconds. Imagine what the last 6 minutes would have done.
Yeah, man. It was going to get grotesque.
Blowing my load in the first 20 seconds, bro. And... but I was like a 9 years old when I first went to therapy.
Like, whoa, yeah, super young.
Yeah. I was forced to go.
Was this, so this was someone else in your life being like, yo, you need help.
My mom.
You gotta go do this.
My mom forced me to go.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And was your mom in like a this is dire type shit, or was she just seeing something in you and was like, hey, I think this would be helpful moving forward kind of thing?
I guess I had like anger problems. I might have been younger than that. I had like real, I was just like really wilding. Kids would like fuck with me and I'd be wilding. And then, my mom was just like, I can't, let me go somewhere for an hour while this talks.
You know,
plays with blocks or some shit. I can't take this nigga. Yeah, that's when I started
bopping these kids on the head.
Yeah.
Freestyling about jerking off.
That's when I started freestyling. And yeah, I mean, kids get depressed too. I think the problem with Black kids is people, they don't think so much about like their inner world as much. Mm-hmm. Like I think there's a lot of people that don't even see, like, I'm gonna say something controversial, but I think people quote this a lot, like the most disrespected person in the world is the Black woman, the Malcolm X quote, which is true. But I also feel like at the same time, it's also acknowledgement that like Black children aren't people. You know what I mean? Cause it's like they are being raised by women. They have like no right. You know what I mean? Like children are the most vulnerable group on the planet. But Malcolm X would never raise his own awareness to speak for the rights of children, to think that they're a person. You know what I mean? Not saying he's right or wrong, but I just think it's interesting because there's probably a mother or father or somebody went home and beat that kid and is just like, is it, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I know what you mean about
I'm like, the idea I'm of like, at no point have people culturally shifted the attention on each group. Like, it's always feels like a gender where it's never like rights of children, or not that it's never, but like Black children are like completely forgot about.
I wonder if part of that is that the intention, at least, of political leaders, of sort of like our you know, our heroes, as they were champions, I guess is maybe a better word. But if part of what their purpose is to make the world better for the existing children, and subsequently don't think to mention them because they're like, well, I'm talking to the adults to fix y'all more than I'm speaking to this generation that still, in theory, has a chance to just live out of harm's way, if that makes sense.
I think that's a difficult idea, though, because then who are you assuming that's doing the work? This generation of broken people that you're speaking towards, right?
Yeah, and maybe that's the short-sightedness of politics, right? It's like, at the end of the day, it's old people yelling at old people to be different, and motherfuckers don't do that. Whereas, like, if politics were truly aimed at the people who things were affecting currently, we wouldn't have an 18-year-old voting. You know what I mean? Like, I think politics should be for children. I think we should be, like, trying to legitimately talk to kids and be like, hey, what do you think is fucked up? How do we make the world what you're going to eventually grow up to live inside of?
I think that. I agree with that. Do you think that's on the politicians, though?
Joe Biden and Kamala need to listen.
I keep asking Joe Biden to come on the podcast, and he keeps telling me about popcorn. He's like, call my boy Popcorn.
My man Pop.
What was the name? That was Corn Pop. He had a Black friend named Corn Pop, and he keeps telling me to call him.
I definitely like the idea of talking about the idea of a Black children, as far as like, it does seem like we learn. I don't know, you ever just talk to white children and they were aware of their personhood a lot, like the culture is different for them as a kid. Like when I was a kid, it was very much like, nothing you think matters. I pay for this house. This is my shit. And then you got to go and figure it out for yourself. But there isn't a lot of like care for that idea of like young personhood, which probably does lead more to depression and things like that, or like just not paying attention to it.
It's more important. It shapes who you are for life. So that's why I feel like, not like what he said was wrong, but that it was misguided, because like you're also speaking to, when you speak to adults, you forget that you're speaking to someone who was once a child, who is an adult who's dealing with things they weren't able to or had to repress as children. And now they're holding on to that. And that's why I think that is more, if not more important to address the child in people and to address the children that are existing, so that adults can deal with the fucking problems they had and be able to like get a hold of that child that was lost or hurt, so that they don't repeat that and then just inflict that same damage on living existing children, or like I said, that, or repeat the same kind of, or repress the emotions that they had from childhood. That's the whole point of therapy. Like, you are who you are as an adult because of these childhood memories that are repressed, because you weren't able to have your own agency, because you weren't able to express emotion. It is repressed, and you are depressed maybe as an adult because of those emotions and that anger you weren't able to express as a child. You know, that's why not only I think is it important, but that's why a lot of Black people have a hard time accepting that they are depressed as adults, because as children they were so damaged and forgotten about and thrown to the wayside. That's, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like Black children are the most discarded people, and you see people grow up, you know, these Black boys and girls who are like dealing with it, and it's like, yo, we're talking about circumstance. We're not talking about the problems maybe we have with each other. Like, there are problems out in the world and different things, but it's also like getting in touch with and healing that child a little bit. Hate to therapize this whole podcast, but hey.
No, you know, I mean, you know, we accept all versions of the podcast, even even the ones that make us go, you're right, brother.
Are you steepling right now underneath?
Yeah.
It's whatever. It's a writer's strike, man. We all gonna be selling crack.
Or smoking it. But one of the things to the larger point of people going untreated or certainly not making the efforts to solve their problems, it says, I read an article that said that 57% of people with MDD, major depression disorder, actually get treatment. So only 57% of people suffering through depression, specifically major depression disorder, are actually going to get the treatment.
Damn.
And then additionally, one of the things that they say is the cause of that is that 85% of Black people, and they're not saying this is solely the cause, but 85% of Black people identify as religious in some form, somewhere between somewhat religious to very religious, and turning more towards church and the traditions of church instead of therapy as this other source.
That's a difficult thing, because we don't know what percent of people the church works for, right? Like, let's say that's the number. What'd you say? It's like 43%,
33%? 85 that identify as religious. Right.
So of that point, of that 85 who identify religious versus the percentage of people who have MDD who do not end up getting help, what percentage of them that turn to the church are healed? Because it does work for a lot of people. It's not my ticket, but that God shit, it gets some people. You never known anybody who was like a terrorist and then they found God and you're like, man, you used to put people in lockers and now you just run the youth group.
Yeah, you're a decent man now in a way that you weren't supposed to be.
I'd be kidding, because I don't think that 85% religious thing is necessary. don't think it's necessarily all that terrible. I don't view that as like a bad thing. That's
well, I think that it is fair to acknowledge that the article also says that like church can be therapeutic for a lot of people, so they're not disgracing the 85% who identify as religious. They're merely saying that that level of religious sort of like across the board doesn't exist in other racial groups.
Okay.
Yeah. Different things are therapy too. I think that's the thing too. Right. Like culturally, we've gotten into the one-on-one or black people or people need to go to depression or need to go to therapy or whatever. But like different things are therapy. You don't have to engage one-on-one. There's like art therapy. There's religiosity as therapy. There's, you know, exercise is therapy. There's all kinds of things that can be therapeutic. So
I watch anime and I'm healed. So I don't know. Maybe I've already been going to therapy. You Langston, ignorant
tentacle porn
life's...
doesn't count, man. Don't count.
Yeah, it's not anime.
Hey, agree to disagree. The artists are exceptional. They're Japanese and they are exceptional.
I always am confused by like, I mean, maybe I'm just not out there in the church world, but do y'all ever meet new church people, like young church people, like in their 30s, like in 40? Like I don't know a lot of church niggas that are young.
The people that I know who have converted did it younger than 30. It was like there was probably a time from like 22 to 26 where I know a good number of people who flipped it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A lot of it's like getting out, you know, of either the military or jail. But
it's,
like,
it's truly like every dude I know that like went off to college and like wild out for a while and like now found a girl that he's like, yeah, this is my baby boo. And I'm fat now and I lost my hair, so yeah, I'm settled and I'll go to church.
Don't put this on, fat people.
I'm just saying the transition this individual made.
He
said
lost his hair,
too.
He said lost his hair. We all know you wavy, baby.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys. But no, it does seem that the transition happens younger. I don't know anyone in their mid-30s who are like, damn, now it's time for God.
Yeah, I think that maybe mid-40s that happens, though.
After 50s, that first divorce?
Middle age?
I think you find God. God's always to fix the thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's either been introduced at a young age and therefore you believe it, or when you come back to it, it's to fix something. It's right. Not just, like, for a fucking study program. You know what I mean?
Damn, that's tricky. Both that and therapy is tricky to me because I hate the idea that people need to feel like they have to be fixed or people are trying to fix them or that they have to change, because you don't have to change at all. Like, there is always this idea, like I think that's prevalent in culture, that something is wrong with people. You know, everyone is like trying to get a new and improved or do this and that or do things that are super complicated and not kind of keep things simple. And it makes people feel worse. Like, the more you try to fix or the more that therapy is like, oh, you need this and that. Like, I probably would have never done therapy if I wasn't forced to do it. You know what I mean? Like, I still believe in it if people are up to it. But I think it's also an idea, like, there's this fixing culture that there's something wrong with people. And it's like,
right,
yo, like, do what you're gonna do. Like, it's your life. Like, no one is trying to change you. I think that's what fucks people up more than the thing, like, of the idea of therapy to begin with. Like, you know,
you're saying there's something short-sighted in looking at this in terms of fixing and more as just a chance to be a better person than you are currently, a better version of yourself than you currently are.
If you want to, but I also think there's like so many different ways to work through depression, like whatever works for you or doesn't work. If you may not even realize it, you have to have the self-awareness for it, but it's not up to other people. Like I would never say, like I would be, I would, you know, motivate people to do it if they would want to do it, or like would be, but I never would be like a poster child for like everybody should go to therapy. I think that's misguided, because it feels like you have to fix, it's a fixing thing, and it's like people do what works for them and they just figure it out.
Yeah, we need healed people, and we also need devils. That's what keeps the whole thing balanced. So you know,
we don't need devils.
Come on, baby.
No,
Langston wants to be a devil. That's the thing. I see his fingers itching for that voice box right now.
Come on, baby.
What you talking about, this voice box?
You see how happy it makes him?
I seen those stab you in your butt videos on Instagram. I was like, man, I hope Nikki walks in on this nigga doing this, bro. I saw his eyes move up, and I was like, I hope his daughter sees him right now.
No, you know what that was? That was the delivery man was coming, and I was like, oh shit, is he going to hear me through the door saying I'm going to stab someone in the anus and then have to like leave my sugar fish outside?
You said it about a lot of groups of people.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna stab all y'all. Please come to the show.
In the butt, though. In the butt.
Yeah, I'm gonna give you something to think about.
And you had the knife.
I'm gonna give you something to think about.
A butt stabbing is so egregious because everybody needs to sit.
And that is the title of Jordan's new upcoming novel. Everybody Needs to Sit. It's a YA novel. It's sort of an expansion of the Everybody Poop verse.
It's an AO novel. That's what it
is. All right. We're going to take one more break. We're going to be back with more Jordan Temple and more My Mama Told Me.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What does optimism look like? I'm on a quest to find the people who inspire us to dream more and do more. I'm Simon Sinek, and I host a podcast called A Bit of Optimism. I talk to all sorts of people, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a hairdresser on Instagram who gives out free haircuts to the homeless, from the CEOs of the world's largest companies to the comedy writer who visited the wreckage of the Titanic. I love talking to leaders, artists, authors, and eccentrics about life, leadership, purpose, mental fitness, human skills, high performance, and other curious things. It leaves me feeling wiser, more inspired, and, well, more optimistic. Because after all, this is a bit of optimism. The world is full of magic and wonder, if you know where to look for it. Listen to A Bit of Optimism on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Every family has skeletons in their closet. Mine certainly does. Ones that go back 100 years and reach thousands of miles back to our hometown in Sicily. Ever since I can remember, my relatives told the story of my great-great-grandmother who was killed by the mafia. I'm Joe Piazza, and in my new podcast, I'm taking on a generational vendetta, visiting the scene of the crime, confronting mafia experts, tracking down Italian officials, and even consulting mediums to set the record straight on my great-great-grandmother's mysterious disappearance. And in between the fact-finding missions, I'll be drinking a lot of wine and eating all of the pasta. Come to Italy with me to solve this 100-year-old murder mystery. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Conspiracy theory. Welcome back to My Mama Told Me. We are deep in the throes of a conversation about mental health, how to do it, what to do with it. And maybe you don't need therapy. Maybe you hoop three times a week because ball is life and that's what gets you through it. We're not here to judge you.
We're open to all possibilities over here. And one of the things that they say is the cause of the persistence for Black depression is because of white inadequate. Well, it's white people. Yes. and it's a little bit of a you're not wrong.
No, I know.
But it's a little bit more of a long haul here is they say that it is in part because of inadequate research as it relates to this larger issue in the Black community, that depression on its own is hard to detect in part because there are more than 1,500 possible combinations of symptoms that in theory a person can have, which means that your depression may not look like my depression, even though we spend a ton of time together and are, you know, sometimes living in the same household, that we could still have very different versions of depression. And white science has not yet learned how to detect those feelings inside of Black people.
I hate that shit so much because they can pull up every goddamn crime statistic we've ever had, food deserts, all this nonsense, but you can't figure out how we're feeling. There's been no studies on that this whole fucking time.
Yeah, they just didn't think about it. They're like, nah, he's yelling in the street because of his personality.
So they got a lot of crime.
Yeah, they don't give a fuck.
He really likes eating that jumbo honey bun because he loves himself.
Yeah.
That's just a centered 25-year-old man. Yeah.
Number one consumers of all flaming hot dust and menthol cigarettes. We don't know how they feel about it.
I know they like spicy. Yeah, and I know they like mint. But that's about it.
I never seen somebody look actually happy to like eat a chopped cheese. You know what I'm saying? I think certain foods I see like Black people eat, not to like food shame, but I definitely, it's like self. I'm like, or even not even Black people, just in general, but like there's food we eat as Americans where I'm like, that's self-hatred. Like every Taco Bell, every Taco Bell like experiment. I'm like,
my man.
When I was a kid, you could, in certain corner stores, you call them bodegas, Jordan, because you're Spanish for some reason in New York.
No, papi, no. I'm Black, papi, but I'm Black.
Corner store. at corner stores, you could buy some Flamin' Hots. And then you could get the dude behind the counter to open it and pour meat and cheese inside of it. And then he would give you like a fork and you could just like have this flaming hot like nacho combination. And that was like a very common, they throw like fucking jalapenos in that shit. Whatever you wanted, you can get that shit done. And none of us ever thought like, man, that's probably not a good sign for us. You know what I mean? We're just like, that's good food. That's cool.
That's so fucked up because it's mixed messages for boys growing up and for girls growing up. Like you'd hear sisters who would get like even Lupe talking about, they say the steroids in the chicken is the reason for the thickening in the young woman. And it'd be like, you know, there's steroids in it. But then on the other side, it would be like, yo, you drink that grape soda, dude, you ain't gonna have no sperm.
Well, it was grape soda for y'all?
Yeah, it was like...
New York is different.
New York, it was wild.
Because we've talked about the sperm soda ad nauseum. So many.
We've never gotten to grape.
No, it's always been... The furthest we've got is like Fanta, right?
Yeah, I think we went as far as Fanta very recently.
No, ours was Tropical Fantasy. Tropical Fantasy was the sperm killer. It'd be like, oh, don't... Or the Blue Mountain Dew. Don't be drinking those. But it's like, yo, but who's getting all these girls pregnant? There's clearly nothing wrong with the soda. The soda's fine.
or the soda ain't as strong as we thought it was.
Or it's holding back the floodgates.
Yeah.
Or is the reason there's not an army of us?
I ain't wearing a rubber, bro. I'm just drink this blue stuff and fucking.
Baby, did you drink your blue stuff? Yes. Okay, you can come in me. One of the things that I think is a final piece maybe to add to this conversation is while Black people on average are still less likely to kill themselves as it relates to feelings of depression, suicidal thoughts, all of that stuff, there has been a major uptick in people wanting to hurt themselves in the Black community. And some of that may be obviously related to not seeking help the same way, right? That they said while Black people on average, the suicide numbers for Black people have gone from 2018 to 2021 have gone from 7.3 people per every 100,000 people to 8.7 per 100,000 people. So it's made like a 1.5 person jump this 3 year span.
Mm. I mean, that's pandemic years though as well, right?
Yeah. 2018 to 2021, you got pandemic through a big portion of that.
Yeah, I feel like that's like a huge, that's like a significant enough occurrence to kind of make you feel like it makes that day. Like, I'd like to see it like from 2023 to 2027.
Well, you know, what's fascinating, and I don't disagree with you, but what is fascinating is that all of the numbers have risen across the board for everyone except white people. White people actually have dropped in numbers during that span of the pandemic, including the pandemic, rather, and everybody else is way higher than they were.
So white people are dropping less, is what you're saying.
White people are feeling more sturdy than ever, and they're standing 10 toes down, and they ain't moving, baby.
Truly one of the more upsetting statistics given on the podcast.
Yeah. And what a dogs. Way to end, huh?
It's the dogs that's keeping white people alive.
Sure.
You see, white people escape depression.
Bori hates dogs, so I get that.
I don't hate dogs. Don't do that to me, first of all. But I think given the chance, like if dogs were given like a raised consciousness, I think the white people are the first ones they would turn on.
I would hope so.
And whoever's fighting them mostly.
Yeah, I would hope it's, yeah.
How conscious we talking?
Like they could talk.
Yeah. Ooh. Talk well, not talk about the shit that they would talk about right now. You want them talking about, like, you know.
I think any mastery of language and they would turn on white people.
You think they would?
Oh, you think basic.
I don't think dogs like wearing clothes. Mm. I don't think like wearing clothes. I don't think they like living in apartments.
I don't think they like Black people either.
No, that comes from the owners. It's like a tension thing. The owners feel tension.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But they were like biting us during civil rights.
They train them to... That's the thing. Dogs aren't loyal. They'll bite anybody you tell them to.
But now it's in their genes to bite.
I think you need them a little smarter than what you have them right now. They don't seem to have much allegiance beyond who's feeding them.
They got the intelligence of a 2-year-old who hates Black people. That's what they...
Right. Yeah, and Jordan seems to think the Black part is permanent, but
I think it's not coded forever. This is like one generation.
I think Jordan thinks they're born that way, and I don't know what to do about that part.
You know what?
Why is it always? It always comes back to dogs and soda on this podcast. I swear to God,
dogs and motherfucking soda. That's all Black people have conspiracies about.
Man, just thinking, just. the thought of dogs talking just is so scary to me. Because I do think they would call, they would definitely call us the N-word. Like every dog.
I don't think so.
I tend to think that when, you know, when you're walking past a house and a dog is just so like yapping, just like hard as fuck. It's just going, nigger, nigger. Nigger.
There's some niggers outside. Look at him.
Hey, all right. You have a good day now.
All right. He's a nice guy. I don't know why he's doing that.
He doesn't usually do this.
Yeah, I bet he doesn't.
He just hates niggers. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, sir. It's not you, my dog. I'm sorry. He hates all niggers. It's not
guys,
you.
Guys, I swear to God, if you could hear what he's saying in his language, it's just a racial thing. It's yeah, not.
It's not.
He's not a mean guy. He just doesn't like you.
Yeah. So he was just born,
Jordan.
This way.
I think we did it. I think this covers the entire discussion. It certainly should. Could you tell the people where they can find you and what cool shit you have going on?
I don't got no cool shit going on. You can't find me nowhere. I guess I'm doing Sweet Lorraine, a solo show about my grandma on the 23rd and 24th of June at the Elysian. And you can find me at Courage Bagels in Virgil Village. It's really good bagels. Go there. I hope this reaches somebody so they can get me a real cool hat there. Every time I go, the employees of Courage Bagels have really cool hats and they never plug me in. But it's a really good place. Montreal style bagels. Go check it out. And check out Rick's Produce.
Go find Jordan at Courage Bagels and give him a hat. I think he wants you to give him a hat when you see him there, and don't bring your racist dog, I guess. He's not going to get along with it. And Bor, you want to tell the people where they can find you?
Cool Guy Jokes 87 on Instagram. Man, I'm really into these remote control boats. So if anybody wants to send me like more information, I need to figure out. I need a situation for my battery life to last longer on the water because it's just not going as long as I would like. So if anybody has any information about RC boats, you know, send that my way.
Send my man boat. Send my other man a hat.
Yeah. Wait, also, June 18th, I'm headlining the DC Improv with Jamel Johnson.
Hey.
May 19th. High Note Comedy in Denver. We got Brad Sativa coming up. Gonna be a good time.
Hell,
the boats,
yeah,
thing, for real. Because I don't know if I should switch to gas or if I should stay electric. I don't really know.
As always, you can find me at Langston Kermit. I'm not gonna keep helping you with this boat shit.
You,
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Wait till you try the boat. That's gonna be your therapy. Wait till you try a remote control boat. You're gonna be surprised. Fuck. Of the five black guys I've let run them, everyone liked it. So
yeah, I believe I'll like it. I don't know that it's going to be the healing I need, but I believe I'll enjoy the boat.
First step to healing is open yourself up to healing, Langston.
Damn. That's heavy. Yeah. And it makes me think. And if you want to think like me, you can follow me at Langston Kermit on Instagram.
He's going to do your real plugs after that.
Yeah, I'm going to move right
through.
You want
to think like
watch me.
Watch
me finesse. Watch me Eurostep this goofy conversation about boats. And if you want to see me live, you can. I'll be at Wise Guys in Utah, West Jordan, Utah, June 23rd and 24th. I'll be at the Philly Punchline, July 6th through 8th. And then I'll be at Dead Crow in Wilmington, North Carolina, July 28th and 29th. I would love for y'all to come out. They're going to be fun ones. And then, as always, follow the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel, fucking, you know, send us your own drops, your own conspiracy theories. Tell us how depressed we make you at mymamapod or mymamapod@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We did it. Bye, bitch.
You're the man now. At Jordy Ploy, you can follow me.
The government growing babies. Microchips in your anus. All koala bears are racist. The ozone layer owes me money. Martians invented turkey stuffing. Y'all can't tell me nothing.
Are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
Well, how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.